The Year I Stopped Being Invisible by Idris Ellison. Narrator, Daniel Hartman. Chapter 1. Static in the Head. The trick to becoming invisible wasn't about holding your breath or shrinking into the floorboards. It was about becoming a piece of furniture with a pulse, a slightly damaged coat rack, a potted fern that had seen better days but was now just part of the decor. I had mastered the art of the peripheral glance. From the third row, second seat from the window in AP History, I could watch the ecosystem of Northwood High without being eaten by it. The ecosystem was simple, brutal, and predictable. At the top of the food chain sat Chloe Sterling, who didn't just occupy space, she colonized it. She moved through the halls like a shark in a tank of minnows, her laugh a sharp, calculated instrument designed to test the structural integrity of everyone around her. Today, she was testing mine. She was standing by the water fountain flanked by two girls whose faces were blank slates waiting for Chloe's graffiti. I kept my eyes on the back of Mr. Harrison's neck, a map of red veins and balding scalp. But my peripheral vision tracked the cluster of bodies near the lockers. Chloe's head tilted. Her lips painted a shade of red that looked like a warning label, curved into a smile that didn't reach her eyes. "Hisper, she's looking at us," one of the minions whispered, though her voice carried the volume of a shout in the vacuum of the hallway. Chloe didn't turn. She didn't have to. The air pressure in the room shifted. I felt it in my teeth, a low-frequency hum of attention turning toward me. My heart did a frantic, erratic tap dance against my ribs, but my face remained a mask of bored compliance. I adjusted my glasses, a gesture I practiced in the mirror until it felt less like a defense mechanism and more like a biological function. "Who?" I asked, my voice barely rising above the ambient roar of slamming metal and teenage shouting. I turned slowly, deliberately to face Chloe. I kept my expression neutral, the way one looks at a storm cloud, acknowledging its existence but refusing to grant it emotional weight. Chloe's smile widened, exposing teeth that were too white, too perfect. "No one, Alara. Just wondering if you're still alive. You've been awfully quiet since freshman year. I was starting to think you'd move to another dimension." The minions giggled. It was a wet, ugly sound. "I'm right here," I said. "Just studying." "Studying how to be a ghost?" Chloe stepped closer. The scent of her perfume, vanilla, and something metallic, like cold coins, hit me. It was suffocating. "It's a waste, you know. All that potential just evaporating. Like you're afraid of taking up space." "I'm not afraid of space," I said, my voice steady. "I'm afraid of people who measure it." Chloe's eyes narrowed. For a second, the mask slipped, revealing a flash of genuine irritation, perhaps even curiosity. Then, as quickly as it had appeared, it was gone, replaced by a dismissive curl of her upper lip. "Whatever. Don't let the door hit you on the way out, Vance. Or don't open the door at all. I hear it's quieter that way." She turned on her heel, her designer bag swinging like a pendulum, and walked away. The tension in the air dissipated, replaced by the usual hum of indifference. I exhaled, a long, shaky breath that I hoped no one noticed. My hands were trembling. I shoved them into the pockets of my oversized cardigan, a gray wool thing that swallowed my frame whole. I wasn't invisible. I was just too small to notice until someone tripped over me. And Chloe Sterling was always looking for things to trip over. The bell rang, a shrill electronic shriek that sent a wave of bodies surging toward the exits. I waited. I always waited. Let the tide go out before I moved. I packed my books slowly, methodically, ensuring every notebook was aligned, every pen capped. By the time I stepped into the hallway, the crush had thinned to a trickle. I needed air. Not the recycled, dust-mote-filled air of the library, but real air. The kind that smelled of exhaust and damp earth and possibility. Northwood High sat on the edge of town, a sprawling brick monolith that overlooked the old industrial district. Behind the school, past the basketball courts and the neglected community garden, was the radio station, WNWT, the Northwood Talking Town Station. It was a converted warehouse, all exposed brick and exposed wires, owned by the city but leased to the school for community outreach. It was my sanctuary and my prison. Mr. Henderson had found me there last semester, hiding behind the mixing console, trying to fix a broken aux cord with a paperclip and sheer will. He hadn't scolded me for trespassing. He hadn't reported me for hiding. He had asked if I knew how to solder. I had. My father had been a tinkerer, a man who believed everything could be fixed if you just understood the mechanics of its failure. He had taught me before the Simons took him, before the house became a museum of his absence. "Alara Vance," he had said, leaning against the doorframe, a half-eaten sandwich in one hand and a